good afternoon, I should say, and welcome to Town Square. As we always say, these conversations include you, and if you'd like to join us anytime during the hour, our phone lines are open at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, that's the number to reach us. Now, we're hearing a lot these days about transgender issues. In recent weeks, the president's stance on how schools should accommodate transgender students with the bathroom preference that syncs with their gender identity has caused both celebration and outright anger. Beyond the bathroom, a draft policy on transgender students from the Hawaii Department of Education is with the state attorney general. And today, Civil Beat ran an article that at the moment, the current number of transgender inmates are assigned to jails that reflect their birth gender, and that on paper, the state is in compliance with federal guidelines. We talked about that this morning in the reality check on the conversation. Clearly, transgender issues are now more sharply in focus. Today on Town Square, we're going to look at the status of transgender people in Hawaii and the nation, and with the impact of celebrity cases and recent research. Since the 1960s, Dr. Milton Diamond has been conducting research on sexual development. That includes the factors in how an individual comes to the development of heterosexuality, homosexuality, transsexuality, or intersexuality. He says these factors are both biological and sociological, both nature and nurture. Also in the studio with us is Tracy Ryan. She's the executive director of Harm Reduction Hawaii and has been a transgender activist for more than 25 years. In 1990, she co-founded the support group Hawaii Transgendered Outreach and has been a board member of Kulia Na Mamo, a peer-based outreach and support group for Mahuwahine and other trans persons dealing with issues relating to addiction, sex work, and reintegration after being incarcerated. And again, you're here too, and the conversation includes you at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Let's talk about some terminology first. We hear people say transgender. We also hear people say transgendered. And there are a lot of other permutations of that. I want to ask both of you, as you look within the community itself, is there any agreement on how we should be talking about people?
No. I think you can say there may be a consensus, but there's never been an entire agreement over terminology. And
it keeps changing.
Yeah. People get very defensive about words and labels and what they want to define themselves at and don't like being defined by others, obviously. My concern is that oftentimes it leads to conflict between people within our own community over issues which I think are not as important as the fundamental ones, which are affecting our lives in terms of, you know, we have real enemies. Maybe we should focus on those fights and not over a question whether an ED belongs at the end of a word. Right now, the consensus is the word is transgender. But to describe what? Transgender and transgendered were both developed out of a term called transgenderist, which was a word invented by Virginia Prince in the 1970s to define someone who lived in the opposite gender without surgery. Later, it became an umbrella term and was used for the community.
Virginia Prince also was a person who wanted to present the fact that she lived as a woman, but she was heterosexual. So she found her partners among women. So that was a confusing thing for many people.
It's also confusing for a lot of people who don't necessarily live or have great discourse with people who are in the transgender community. And after reading your latest chapter of a book that I think is your chapter that was published in April this year, there seems to be so much more to this discussion than we ever hear. So many permutations that we don't really talk about. But for the sake of sharing some knowledge now, can you walk us through that a little bit and let's talk some more about what that really means?
Well, first, we know that there's a strong genetic component to it. So that if you find one person if you find a set of twins and one wants to change his or her gender, usually the twin also wants to change the gender. And that happens if they're identical twins. It doesn't happen if they're fraternal twins. So we know there's a strong genetic component.
And that happens when the twins have been separated in cases at birth, where they have nothing to do with each other until later?
We don't have many cases where they've been separated, but yes, we do have. We've published on cases where the twins have been separated. One case, they haven't met each other until they were 16, but both of them still transitioned. So we know that there's genetics, but it goes all the way with biological factors to even the teeth are different among transsexuals and others, so that we know there are many biological things.
And brain function?
Put it the other way, there's no social factor that we know. If somebody wanted to be a transsexual in Iran, they won't come out and say it because they can be killed for that. So that there's cultural things that are affecting whether somebody will manifest or not.
But back to the biological, in terms of the brain function, you know, some of your recent research has been saying that the brain functions are different.
Absolutely. We know that the brains of transsexuals, and I use the term transsexual or transgendered interchangeably, then there are political reasons that some people want me to use one term other than the other. But regardless, the brains within transsexual individuals are different. They both have male and female characteristics that are not seen in the brains of non-transsexuals. So we know that they're motivated by something within them to say, I am not a male or I am not a female. So I don't identify with my genitals. I identify with my brain.
How do you see that manifested? I mean, besides someone telling you that, if you look at the brain of someone you just saw a scan, would you be able to tell the difference?
No. Well, first of all, the brains of individuals investigated, you have to look at somebody who died and contributes their brain to be looked at. And in those individuals that have died but who have lived as males or females, their brain tells them the way they should manifest. And society also, somebody who acts in what we call a masculine way gets treated by society differently than they would act as if they were females. And we know that it's much more difficult for males, biological males, who want to live as females because they get bullied, and it's very difficult for them in our society.
At what age do you see that this begins to manifest, when a child will know that he or she may be, to use that old hackneyed phrase, born in the wrong body? And the reason I ask is yesterday there was another piece on NPR about a little girl born as a boy but who very quickly identified with being a little girl.
Usually the child will know by the time they're two or three. Usually it comes when they first have speech, the ability to speech, and when they can formulate their thinking in terms of words, and that's when they begin to say, here's what I feel. And they usually will start off and say, Mommy, why did God make a difference, or why did God make a mistake? Because the child does not understand what's happening to himself or herself.
How consistent is that with the people that you know, Tracy?
Well, it's hard to say, because a lot of the people of our generation did not make those kind of statements at those kind of ages, because they were not appreciated at that time in culture. Most people say that they feel something early on, but it may not be as co-ed it is today, because in prior times there weren't examples of transgendered people in the media around, and so they didn't really know what it was. They just knew that, oh, maybe I want to put on a dress, or maybe I want to do this. And it was difficult for them to articulate without some understanding for a lot of people. There used to be a differentiation. I don't know how Mickey feels about this in, I guess, from the 1960s, between the primary and the secondary transsexual. The primary transsexual being the one who's very clear from a very early age that this is what they want. And the secondary one, who seems to occur later on and says, well, I have these feelings, but I'm coming into this from a standpoint of maybe being someone who just liked dressing up, or maybe being someone who thought they were gay, and now I've evolved into this. I don't know where science is on that now, but that was something that was current in the 1960s and 70s, this differentiation. But this is an evolving field, and as we evolve, as we become more accepting of allowing children and others to speak to this issue, we're finding more complications, more different issues, and it's not a thing where everyone is transgendered in the same way. Well, it's not like being left-handed. You know, it's different for everybody.
The child doesn't have to wait for society to come to that. The 2-year-old or 3-year-old doesn't know that society is discussing this as an issue. They just know what happens to themselves. So they say to mommy or daddy, why am I in the wrong body, or something like that. So they put it in very simple terms, and the parents don't understand what they're talking about. So that's the difficulty. But we know already there are television programs that are now catering to kids that have been brought up either as boys and now living as girls.
There was a couple on last night.
Yeah.
Transgender Youth Camp, and they've got I Am Jazz and other things.
Right.
It's a different world than the one that I grew up in the 1960s.
For a long time, there was this, you know, idea that kids weren't sexual beings. They were just, you know, sort of mini blobs, and they were kind of evolving as they were going along, and that the whole sexual component didn't happen until adolescence. I mean, we know now that that's anything but true. You watch little kids, and they're highly sexualized, and unfortunately sexualized. But when you look at how this has been evolving, along with what we know about how brain function works, there seems to be a nexus there with how we regard kids and how we look at what we can expect from them in the way they can be very forthcoming about the way they feel about their own sexuality.
Not only is it true with the kids, but we have to look at, Tracy was talking about how things have changed over the years. We know that people will still transition in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they will generally say, oh, I've thought this for many years, but I was married and I didn't want to disturb my wife or harm my kids or anything like that. So there were social reasons that kept me living as I was, and that's why it takes me till 70. I didn't want to die
without being authentic.
That's right, living the way I felt. So this, we see people, we hear this all the time. Now, there's another term that's come out, and it's caused division among many people. There are those who say, well, there's a term called autogynephilic transsexuals or homosexual transsexuals. Well, I, in my own personal experience, and I'm sure it's the same with others, have found people that don't fit into either of those categories. So, in other words, we don't have just sheep and goats. We have all kinds of people, and some think they're 20%, 30%, 40% of whatever characteristics, and that seems fine with them. Why should we challenge? There's no reason, I think, that society has to challenge. If you ask somebody how they are, we don't ask them about, are you Jewish or Catholic or Protestant? We just accept that. Why don't we accept what somebody else says is their gender.
Which is to say, in many ways, that we're finding out so much more about what we thought was very cleanly cut, you're this or you're that, and that there may be some places where you are, in some situations, both.
That's exactly so.
You've got both a cultural and a legal system, because the legal issue is that in our society, you are legally male or legally female. And if you want to change your identification, there's some sort of legal process. We just went through a legislative session where they worked to say that people who are identified as transgendered can change their birth certificates.
Without surgery.
Without surgery, right. But this is a legal process because you're legally one or another. I'm not personally altogether sure why someone needs to be legally male or female. But this is an issue that has been a political roadblock with transgender people for a long time, is that in order to be identifiable in their gender of choice, they need to have legal documentation. And it's taken a long time in some states for this to become facilitated.
Question for you, given the fact that we know that most research is pretty much skewed toward men, and women for years have said, well, there's not enough research on women and hearts and heart health and all kinds of other issues. And now that we know that there's not just maybe just male or just female, that you may be having people who identify in one way or another, is that in your mind going to change how we have certain norms or certain ideas, actuarial tables, all of that?
I hope so. I mean, why should we think? Yes, certainly there are cases that we can conceive of where it may make a difference if you are biologically male or female. Yeah, there are only so many people that can be deliver children, you know, and how do we treat them differently than those who don't? But there are not that many instances where we have to pay attention to that. And I think the more freedom we have socially, the better off the society will be.
If you're just joining us tonight, we're talking about transgender issues, a lot of the things that don't populate the narrative that most of us hear. Tonight, we're talking about them with Dr. Milton Diamond, who's been doing research since the 1960s, and with Tracy Ryan, who's been a transgender activist for the last 25 years. And you, and if you have a question about what does it mean to be transgender, why are we having these conversations, give us a call, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Part of the discussion is that it's just not as narrowly defined as perhaps we thought it once was, and there are a lot more permutations that perhaps need to be considered. If you have a question, give us a call, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We want to hear how you are approaching this national narrative on transgender issues.
We might challenge and say, ask the question, why do people think that so many people would arbitrarily want to present themselves with the stigma and the social problems that go along with making these expressions?
I mean, it takes a lot of effort.
It takes a lot of effort.
And you put yourself out there and you can possibly get slammed.
Absolutely. And that's so there's very little evidence that there are social desires that enhance this decision.
In other words, it's not a choice.
It's not a choice. Absolutely.
I wanted to comment on your question about the research on men versus women. And one of the things that has been characteristic of the transgender community has, until fairly recently, the majority of the attention and the research has been on boys becoming girls rather than girls becoming boys. So you're seeing, interestingly, something that parallels what you brought up within transgender. The people who are boys first and transition are getting a lot more interest and attention than the people who are little girls who want to become boys. This is not current. It's currently changing. It's changing recently, but this has been historically true.
Not only that, there are recent studies which talk just about same gender relationships. And that has definitely come out to be seen as much more prevalent than it used to be. So it's not only gay marriages, but it's just gay social relationships, which are more accepted in the general public.
Which is to say that the fabric of society is changing in certain ways. Obviously, there's going to be a backlash to that, and we've seen that in some of the speech that's mm-hmm. come out, some of the discussion that's been happening, even over the North Carolina issue, especially over the North Carolina issue, perhaps most recently. Do you expect that with as many steps forward as you may have seen in this, that there will be a pullback?
Well, there's going to be resistance, but the people who are resisting us don't seem to understand what they're resisting and or why they're resisting it. If you look at this North Carolina bathroom bill, it says you have to use the bathroom of your birth assigned gender, what's on your birth certificate, let's say. Well, we have trans men, men who are born female, who are very masculine, have beards and are balding and have had their breasts removed and have big muscular arms. It's like, now you're saying the law requires them to go into the ladies' room in public places. I don't think women are going to react to that.
Well, how is anybody going to know?
It's idiotic. Well, but they're going to see a man in the ladies' room and say and scream, and the fact is the man was born female.
No, but I'm saying if the guy is looking like that and he walks into a men's room, who is even going to question that?
Well, that's the fact that is true all the time. Nobody looks at somebody else's genitals in their bathroom as they walk in.
Or ask for the birth certificate to prove that you're one or the other.
That's right.
So it's my point is if the law was just followed to the letter, it would have a result that was exactly the opposite of what it was proposed to do.
So the question is this whole discussion a tempest in a teapot?
These people aren't thinking. They're just trying to blindly attack people. They're not thinking. They haven't thought through what they're doing. They're just being vicious.
All right, we're going to go to some callers now. We're going to Maria calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Maria. Welcome to Town Square.
Okay. So, you know, I've listened to a program in the past on NPR, and they talked about how this was a medical perspective going on with the water supply and chemicals in our diet through plastics and whatnot, and how that was causing children not to be fully formed in their own sex. And then this morning we're listening to a priest on NPR from the Catholic Church promoting GMOs, saying it's okay to mutate the genes because who cares what happens in 100 years. And now we're hearing in the evening that, you know, transgender is this mutation and, you know, people are just going to what their sex should be. And I would just like to hear what you guys have to say about all that, because to me it sounds like we have some chemical things going on in our environment, and that's causing some changes in people at whatever age.
Good question.
So
thanks.
I'm going to hop off the line.
Maria. Thanks so much for the call. She's wondering what, you know, some people have been saying for a long time, that because we have so many pollutants, because there are chemicals and because there are substances to which we're being subjected to, sometimes don't even realize how many are in our bloodstream, and unless you have your blood work done and to see what's in there, that is that in fact changing how we are developing? Is that changing us?
Well, it's certainly a thought, but there doesn't seem to be any evidence. Let me just talk about intersexuality, because I think that transsexuals are an example of intersexuality. But we have people that are born with an ovary and a testis. We can have people that are born that have a prostate on one side, and yet they have breasts on the outside. So we know that that's the way the people are born. And we have evidence that the way they die. And then when they die, their brains are examined, and it seems that they, too, have male and female characteristics. Now, what do I mean when I say male and female characteristics? We know that in the brain there are portions of the brain that are differentiated into male and female. Males have this type of brain, females have that. Well, we see that the opposite we expect is in the transsexual individual. And we think that that goes along with the same idea that they had a testis or an ovary when they were born. So why should we expect any different? We don't expect the differences.
When we would hear about cases like that, not only that many years ago, the idea was, well, you know, clearly there is an abnormality here that we have to fix.
That's right. Well, nowadays, there's no reason to want to fix it, except, yes, there was the desire. Physicians mean well, but we know that the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Yes, they meant well, but they did poorly.
All right, we're going to take another call. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'd like to respond to that. I believe that chemicals within the environment can mimic the effect of naturally occurring hormones. They may attract to the same receptors, and they may cause in overuse and over-feminization of a person. But there's no evidence that it's affecting persons' brains or the way that they feel about themselves. Because if you look at, say, India, which has a very large transgender population and does not have, you know, this all of these chemicals which we're seeing in the U.S. environment,
things, yes.
We're not seeing higher rates there or in other civilizations or in different times. So it doesn't seem like, although there are chemicals which may affect things, that they are, that we can show any statistical relationship to the number of people who identify as transgender.
In India, they call them Hijra. Hijra, H-I-J-R-A, Hijra.
All right, we're going to take a few more callers. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. More to the conversation about what it means to be transgender than we usually hear when we're spotlighting certain issues. Tonight, if you have a question, Dr. Milton Diamond has been researching sexuality and sexual development since the 1960s, recently wrote a chapter on transgender issues, and we're talking about that tonight to be able to understand that there's a little more to this conversation than some of what we're getting, even when we're talking about issues concerning schools and bathrooms. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Richard calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Richard. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha. Thanks for taking the call. I'm really glad the conversation's happening and really glad to be in on the conversation. I have a question for Dr. Diamond directly, if I may. And that in your research since the 1960s, have you found anything pertaining to whether or not Bobo is a true super fan of the Howard Stern Show or just a big false phony? Baba Booey.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Okay, Richard.
Can you?
No, I. That's fine. Richard hung up. Going to Danielle calling us from Maui.
Hi, my name is Danielle Bergen, and I'm a transgender woman who lives on Maui. I came out rather publicly a few years ago when I was with the Maui Chamber of Commerce. And I was one of those people, as the doctor was saying, that I knew from like the age of two or three that something was different. And I used to get in conversations with my mom about it, and she, you know, was just exasperated because of me just persisting that, you know, I was really a girl and not a boy. Eventually, because of, you know, her denial of that with me, and I kept my mouth shut, and then my religion, which I was born into Catholic religion, it was just, you know, I think God doesn't make mistakes, and that's how I lived my whole life, and knowing still that, you know, I kept thinking, well, maybe I'll just change and like to be a boy or want to be a boy, but no matter how hard I tried, I wasn't. And I was an athlete and everything else. But I transitioned when I was 54, and it's just not so much that, you know I'm a transgender woman, but I just, for me, I'm female. I'm a woman, and, you know, people that meet me now, I really don't, you know, that never knew me before, they don't know any different. And you know, I live my life basically as a woman, but I do some transgenderism.
And how is your relationship with your mother, if she's still living?
You know, I wish she were still alive. She died before I transitioned. So,
did she ever come to accept your feelings?
Pardon?
Did she ever come to accept your feelings?
You know, I heard a story from my stepfather that he had said that she was being asked one day if I had still dressed up in woman's clothes or anything of that nature. And my mom said she wasn't sure, and then there was a lull in the conversation, and then she turned to my stepfather and said, you know, Danny should have been born a girl. So, but yeah, that was, to me, she did accept it.
Good enough.
I never found out personally.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. We appreciate it.
No problem.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight on Town Square, we're talking a little bit more deeply about what it means to be transgender. We hear fits and spurts of conversation that has to do with how little kids may feel or what bathroom may be appropriate, but there's so much more to the conversation, and we're looking at that tonight with Tracy Ryan, who is a longtime activist in transgender issues, and also Dr. Milton Diamond, who for many years, since the 1960s, has been researching sexual development. So if you've got a question, now's the time to call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Michelle, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Michelle. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, and thank you so much for having this conversation. You know, I'm a 65-year-old woman, and when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a boy so badly, and I've always loved boy toys and so-called boy things, and I grew up in the generation that was very stereotyped, you know, shoved me into dresses and pink clothes and curls in my hair and all the things that I hated, and I'm not gay. I've always been attracted to men, and yet I so much more embrace my masculine side that I finally, as over these last few years, as this conversation has become more developed, I realize what I am, which is basically a gay man stuck in a woman's body.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're talking about multifaceted aspects of humanity, that we don't have to be just one or the other, and like, oh, you're a little girl, so you have to play with baby dolls, you have to want to be a mommy and all this stuff.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for calling, because you seem to be bringing up a lot of the issues that Dr. Diamond was talking about earlier in the show, that and you too, Tracy, when you say it's, you know, black or white, legally male or female, and science is telling us that maybe it just ain't so.
I think that what the caller just said, that many children, when they're small, think about being of the other gender, but they stay the same. They generally consist and persist as they are, and they talk of these as persisters or desisters, those that want to change and those that decide that they'll be happy living as they are. So that happens naturally. So I think what we just heard was a typical story.
Mm. Well, it's complicated, because a lot of transgender persons have, you know, mixed elements. I grew up and enjoyed a lot of aspects about being a little boy. You know, I liked playing with boy toys. I liked playing with the other kids. I liked going out and doing the things they did. But I always had this feeling that, you know, there's something else out there that girls have that I want, that way that they present themselves, the way how pretty they are. Now, I could be getting made up and wearing dresses and doing all these things. And after a while, you reach a point where you say, you know, this feeling inside me is real. This needs to be who I am. It needs to be my person in life, because if I want to be a successful human being, then I have to first love myself and honor myself and my feelings about myself. Only then can I be a successful and useful member of a society, because if I'm going out and just giving everything to society, I may be giving and giving, but inside I'm rotting away. And a lot of people, like these people who transition in life, they've gave and gave and gave to being their original gender role, and they've rotted away on the inside, and to the point where they can't take it anymore. And that's not the life we want for our people. We want to change that paradigm.
Does that describe you? If you have made a transition. How did you do it? When did you do it? And why? This idea that somehow you can be living your life externally and yet, as Tracy Ryan says, have it rot away on the inside seems to be an untenable situation that most people wouldn't wish on anyone else. And yet we've been so very quick to put people into boxes and to be able to label them so that we can understand them. But given what science has been teaching us about brain function, a lot of your work, Dr. Diamond, to understand that there are so many levels to this that really aren't part of the public discourse. It's not part of the national narrative as we talk about, well, who gets to use what bathroom? Are we finally beginning to understand that there are many more parts to this discussion than just who, you know, is labeled in what way?
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes, there are many more things, but people don't think that deeply. Generally, they think about surface issues, you know, how do you live, how do you walk, how do you talk, and those are the things that people decide, make their decisions. But the individual, the transsexual individual, feels and is reacted to by society who sees that person in a certain way, and they realize they either feel good about the way they're being treated or they're not.
What about in Hawaii, though? We seem to feel differently about that. We have different traditions, certainly within the Hawaiian culture, different traditions, and something that you know pretty intimately, Tracy.
Yes. Well, we have an old Hawaiian tradition, which people argue about the extent to which this concept of mahu involved people who are transgendered or gay or what it meant. And I've heard people argue about it. But there is a pretty good situation with what's called the wizard stones, which are four stones in Waikiki, which represent four teachers who came from Tahiti about 1600. And if you read the Hawaiian language on it, it's very clear that these people are trans as we would understand it, or clear that that concept is in this plaque. But if you read the English language version, you don't get that. So someone has decided for the American consumption, we're going to change this element, which is troublesome. But if we talk about culture here in Hawaii, we're talking a lot about what I would call local culture, which has grown up in the 20th century among transgendered people working primarily in the sex industries, working in Chinatown, being part of a pageant circuit, a large community of people who are fairly well connected. In other words, you come out and all of a sudden you know 500 people. Well, maybe not 500, but you know a lot of other people who are in the same situation. And so for younger people growing up, particularly people who are from Hawaii and maybe not affluent because you're class, your economic class affects, I believe, how things turn out for you. There's a role for you to go. And the reason I talk about these socioeconomic classes, I feel like people who come from a position of privilege, like I'm a white middle-class person, if I'm giving up my role as a male, I'm giving up quite a lot. And there's a lot more hostility within some groups, particularly in the mainland, towards this transition than it is if you're poor, if you're an African-American on the mainland, if you're Hawaiian in Hawaii, they're not offering you, you know, what's being offered to these other people. That's an unfortunate, that's a societal thing. But what I see is an awful lot of people who transition before age 20 are people who are from a lower socioeconomic background and people of color, where an awful lot of people who transition after age 35 are in Hawaii, maybe Japanese or Caucasian, or come from a more affluent background. And I don't have a study on it, but I see that. And I also see what's troubling is that until about 10 years ago, there was very little communication between these two groups who had transitioned. So when I ran the gender support group, I was dealing with a lot of people who were not local. They were in the military, they were affluent, they were married, they identified themselves then as cross-dressers, although some of them went forward and transitioned. And they had an almost entire lack of knowledge of this entire other group of people, the people who are doing sex work, the people who transitioned at an earlier age, the people who are very clear about their sexual orientation being towards men. This was like two completely different worlds with neither of the worlds communicating with them. And it was very frustrating for me being an activist, trying to get people who are transgender but come from different worlds to interact with each other
so
and understand each other.
Why was there no interaction between them? It seems like there might be a natural affinity to at least have a conversation.
Well, there was a developing cultural thing where the one group just saw – there was the one group, the people who were more affluent, saw the other people as primarily what they used to derogatorily call drag queens and not real transgender people. And they were just gay men putting on dresses and having sex and stuff where – it's like,
so they marginalized them.
They marginalized them. And the marginalized group, as in from society, said they looked at the more affluent cross-dressers and said, well, those are just dates. Those are the men who come down and want to pay us for sex and want us to dress them up. So we don't want to have anything to do with it because they're not part – we don't identify with us, them. They're not part of our sisterhood. And so this went on for a long time.
And what changed?
I think that that the community got bigger. More people came out. There's more internet. There's more conversation. There's more TV shows. When you see someone like Caitlyn Jenner, who's obviously coming from the privileged point of view, making an effort to go to these groups such as Kalia and Amamo that we used to work with here, work with girls coming out of prison, girls who've been through sex industry, girls who've been to addicts, and trying to get their point of view and trying to talk to them and learn things. You see, this has been happening now for a number of years, and it's a really positive thing, but it was not always the case.
All right, we're going to pick up that thread in a moment. I want to get some more of our callers, and if you'd like to join us, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. There's a lot of conversation about transgender issues, kids looking at bathrooms and who should be allowed to use what. Obviously, that's part of it, but there's a lot more to the conversation that perhaps we haven't been having until very recently. Are you in on that conversation? When you hear about transgender issues, do you stop to think about some of the other ways in which this may impact society? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Robert, calling us from Schofield Barracks. Aloha, Robert. Hello. Welcome to Town Square.
How you doing? I have a question. So I'm a white male. I'm married to my beautiful wife. So this doesn't really affect me personally, but I think that we should be a part of the conversation. And my question is that do any of you guys ever see gender being taken out of either politically or social aspects of life? Like it's something that we'll never think about anymore? And I'll take my question off the phone.
Thanks very much, Robert. I think a lot of people would like to maybe hope that that might happen, as you talked about earlier, Dr. Diamond, that we wouldn't ask about it or think about it, but the reality seems to be something quite different.
I think that would be impossible. It's too easy to identify. First of all, we do categorize people. They're not only male and female, but they're black or white or Chinese or Japanese or whatever, but they're... it's a category. It makes things easier for us to categorize people, and I think that will remain with us for many years.
Well, we seem to have a need to sort in some ways.
But
he's wondering, do we sort in a different way that doesn't necessarily...
We're sorting in a different way now. And I think what's important is that has been important from the civil rights movement to the women's movement is that we stop in sorting in terms of who has access to the paths of power in our economy, access to jobs, equal access to education, things of these things. These things are important, but I don't think we're going to live in a genderless society when we're biologically, some people have become pregnant and have children, and other people are required to cause that to happen. There's always going to be a sexual need for gender. I think that different societies handle gender in different ways. I mean, if you go and live among, for example, Eskimos, men and women primarily wear similar clothing up there. So the desire to, play dress up in a culture like that, or in a culture where everybody's naked in some jungle, maybe there's no concept of clothing and all of these aspects which we add on in our culture, which have to do with femininity or masculinity, are not part of that culture. Those things are possible, but people like their gendered aspect. And transgender people who become men or women enjoy those gendered aspects of their culture often, not always, that attribute to the opposite sex, which is a part of the pull towards what they want to be and identify.
Right, it's been calling to them for a long time.
Yes,
why would
yes.
they want to give that up?
Right.
I hear your point. When we talked to Robert a moment ago and he said something, he said, well, this doesn't really affect me personally, as in it's not part
right
of
now.
His daily life with his wife and family. But that whole notion of what affects us personally.
A child can affect them.
I'd like to bring up a point Tracy mentioned a few minutes ago with Caitlyn Jenner. Just think what that individual gave up in terms of a transition. So it was not a simple decision. She was giving up her pride of being an Olympic champion of great renown. And she now was giving up and saying, no, that is all lesser importance to me in my life than my identity. And she was saying, I want to live as a woman. Now, I think that's a great individual sacrifice. And it shows that individuals do not make these choices easily.
Can I like weigh in on that? I think you've got, with transgendered people, you have different sorts of life places they can be in. So you have life place number one. I'm in the closet. I'm living as the sex I was told to live as, and I have an internal struggle that's making me unhappy. Life choice number two. I deny my assigned gender. I choose my preferred gender. My inner struggle is being solved, but now I have a struggle with the outside world, society, which scares a lot of people. And life choice number three, I've successfully transitioned, and now I am completely accepted by people who meet me as a member of my preferred gender, and my life choice is not to let anyone know I was ever anything else. We call that stealth. All three life choices have different situations that you have to deal with. And in the life arc of a transgendered person, it takes a lot of thinking and often a lot of support to be able to do the things they need to do to be happy.
And then there's also obviously the other choice, which is to make it consistent inwardly and outwardly and let people know that you did that. And that's what we're hearing more about. And that goes back to the issue of celebrity. And before we move on to Robert calling us from the Big Island, I want to just talk a little bit and just ask you to think about the whole notion of celebrity and just seeing, has that been a really good thing? Has it been a not so good thing? Is it somehow polluting the conversation
because it's not celebrity? No. It's the thing about the celebrity transgendered person is the way that the media assumes that because someone is a celebrity, they're an expert on the transgender topic and automatically says, well, what does this mean and what does that mean? And they may not know. And they may give an answer they just heard last week.
Which could be damaging to everybody else. Which offends people.
And it's because they've got the camera. And the media consistently, you know, has ignored people who are like designated spokespersons for the conversation. Not like what you're doing because you've invited me. But it's as if, you know, our knowledge of the African-American movement came from talking to Black Academy Award winners and ignoring the NAACP. And that's the way the media has treated transgender people. They take the person who's famous and they ignore the organizations and the spokespersons.
They take the person who's famous and make them the expert simply because they're famous.
Right.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on now and go to Robert calling us from the Big Island. And if you'd like to join the conversation, call us soon, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Robert. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I'm really glad you're doing this program. I'm Hawaii Hawaiian. I'm Grace on the Big Island. I'm a senior now, but ever since I was a kid, I was always fascinated because women always seemed to be having the most time, and I loved the fact that they could dress up in colors and moves and stuff. So I never said anything about it, but my mom caught me one time when I was about 12 years old and dressing up like her and gave me a good scolding and maybe promised never to do that again. So I never dressed up like her again. But I dressed up like my auntie. So anyway.
So you kept the letter of your promise.
My feeling is, and I've talked to other friends of mine like this, that I really have an identical twin sister living inside me. And she likes to come out once in a while. I like her to come out and have some fun once in a while. And I'm tired of being scared of what people would think. I'm tired of it, so I'm not going to be scared anymore.
But, Robert, you're not saying that you want to live your life wholly and totally as a woman. You just like to have the flexibility to say, if I want to dress up and have a little fun, then so be it. Well, we have lots of comics who do that, too, and we look at them and we think that's fine.
Well, we used to call this...
It's more than...
Yeah, we used to call this being cross-dresser. Right. That was the term, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, this is me and my sister calling you and thanking you.
Well, thank you very much, dear.
Thanks, Robert, for your call. Dr. Diamond, go ahead.
There have been several studies on cross-gender, and we know, for example, in the Netherlands, they did a particular study, and 3% of the population, of the male population, are living as cross-dressers. So that's a definite mark. And then we have similar things in this country. It's just not documented as well. But
it's more controversial in a very strange way, because as a cross-dresser, particularly if you may be married and other things, you're always kind of in the edge of being in the closet. And there's when you get involved with the transgender community, you may become like pumped up to become transgendered and transgender, when maybe that's not exactly what you really want. But you're around people and there you can see that how much fun that it seems to be for them. So people need to find their own place and not feel within the gender community that there's some sort of ranking order, whereas you're a better transsexual if you've had all the surgeries, or you're better if you're cross-living, you're better if you're only, you know, whatever. You're better when you're happy just being you, and that's what's important.
And for everybody else, too, it seems to be what you're saying is just live and let live.
Well, yeah, in a way.
If they want me, in terms of the transgender community itself, is that... You don't get to be ranked better because you've had all the surgery.
Right.
And just to leave everybody else and pay attention
and
to
and
your
and
own
life. Marginalized groups have a sociological tendency to start sorting themselves into a hierarchy of one sort or another based on various things. This is common. And
the trouble is that the society doesn't always let every group manifest itself. For example, the cross-dressers are among the largest secret minority, sexual minority in our culture, because there's so much stigma against
them. But they still
them.
Have a hierarchy in which the pretty ones have a higher status within that community. They develop within themselves a hierarchy, and because human beings are social creatures which seek status within any group that they're in. That's part of the human condition sociologically.
All right. Well, we have someone who would like to get under the status of being a caller to this program. We're going to go to Rick calling us from Wahiawa. Thank you, Rick, for your patience.
Yeah, I just wanted to know that in the last year or so, and probably Tracy could answer this best, this issue and this show is the classic example, has become really front and center. And I just wondered what you attribute the current interest and why it's become so popular as an item. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Rick, but first I'm going to disabuse you of that idea that suddenly we are just dealing with this now. We've been talking about this on this program for a lot of years. This program's been on the air. It'll be 17 years in December.
But he's asking about why
about
there's so much
why
general
the national conversation.
Yeah, and,
right.
Well, right now there's a legal issue. It's when President Obama made a declaration and that was responded to by North Carolina and other states. So it's become a political issue right now. But it's been, as it's been said, for a long time this has been growing.
Well, I would say that the problems that are going on in North Carolina are more a reaction to the increase in discussion than they are precipitatory to it. I think that the precipitatory events are not something that have happened overnight. I think it's been a long time building up. Transgender as a political movement started in the middle 90s, but as a social movement, it was going from the early 80s through social groups. But now we have, you know, for the first time, we have this barrage of cable channels with time to fill. And
looking for some way that might capture attention.
Transgender stuff is interesting. I mean, we're not the only ones. They have the tall women, you know, the women who are 6'6". They have all sorts of people who are different or living a different lifestyle. And people are interested in people.
So is this a good thing that we have all of this being played out in a way, or are we creating just sort of many more stereotypes?
Well, I don't think we are.
Well, I think it's a good thing that we talk about it. It's just the way it's responded to. In other words, I think it's considered an intellectual discussion. In some places, it's a riot. So it just depends upon the way it's responded to.
Yeah, that's a good point. But what's happening is now we're moving away from a situation where the reporting about transgenderism was as medicalized and scientific discussion only, or you've got some people on some talk show who are just the talk show host is only interested in creating an audience reaction and
frenzy.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Now we're allowing more and more real transgendered people to have airtime to tell their individual stories and what's going on. So we're seeing them in a variety of different settings as people, and people first and transgendered second.
Which kind of goes back to an idea of diversity that we hadn't really been willing to entertain for a while.
Well, I think that we've been moving in that direction.
Human
I think
diversity.
The current, the millennial generation is probably the most tolerant of diversity of any generation we've ever had in this country. So I think the direction we're moving is positive.
As you look out over the next 5 years, what changes do you see happening within the transgender community and the subsets of that?
I think the main thing that I'm working for is the sex worker rights thing, which has now, as of 2014, become much more of interest to people in the transgender political establishment and the gay rights establishment. A number of them have signed on to the Amnesty International position that sex work should not be criminalized. It should be decriminalized. And I think that's the thing we're going to be hopefully working on, because that affects an awful large section of our community.
Tracy is discussing sex workers because there's so much discrimination against transsexuals that they find difficulty in making a living, an honest living. So they resort to sex work because they can make money both for the surgery needed and other things associated with it.
Although I wouldn't generalize that.
No,
there's a very big issue, particularly in the past. And I know girls who've been fired from a straight job who'd been sex workers who went right back to sex work. But, you know, there are girls who just like doing sex work, despite what people say. There are girls who just like doing sex work. But sex work has changed a lot. Used to be there was a community down in Chinatown of people. And that community has largely been taken over by drugs. And most of the girls who are not interested in becoming hardcore addicts are now on the internet, which means the sense of community is largely gone. But the threat of arrest and incarceration is still there. And that's still an issue.
Dr. Diamond, I want to just ask you, too, what you think is going to be more of the conversation that we're going to hear and participate in as we go in the next 5 years.
You mean in terms of gender?
In terms of gender. I got about 30 seconds. What do you think we're in for next?
Well, I think first there will be more intent. There will be a throwback to the old question of what causes homosexuality. I mean, transsexuality and intersexuality are issues, but more people, I think, are generally interested in the question of homosexuality.
But still looking at that as being a biological issue.
I, for one, certainly think it's more a biological than a social issue. People are reacting to the way they feel internally, and their partner they choose is generally of the same sex.
All right, we've got to leave it there. Only in the interest of time, we'll have to talk together another time. Dr. Milton Diamond, yes. Tracy Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you, too, for joining us tonight on Town Square. I'll see you tomorrow morning on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.